OT After Dark is a podcast run by two occupational therapists and is for adults only. The views on this podcast are our own and are intended for information and educational purposes only. We believe that sex and sexual pleasure are a human right for consenting adults, regardless of ability, age, gender, or sexual orientation. We discuss topics that cover a wide variety of sex and sexual practices. To be true to our strong views regarding inclusivity, we use common and slang terms regarding sexual topics, which may be considered explicit. Listener discretion is advised.
We have exciting news to share. We recently partnered with DirectRec, a free app for OT practitioners, PT practitioners, and speech-language pathologists.
DirectRec helps clinicians to find peer-vetted products, and we recently have added our own recommendations of products on DirectRec for sexual health and wellness.
We helped DirectRec get a little extra sexy. DirectRec helps clinicians share products and other digital info, like YouTube videos and Google Docs, with their clients.
DirectRec helps you to track clients' follow-through on your product recommendations. So to start using DirectRec, click on the link on our website at otafterdark.com or in our social media bios.
Hi, I'm Kay.
And I'm JJ.
And we're both occupational therapists.
And we're here talking to you about sex.
We've been working on a special episode.
This is a student-centered episode.
Student-centered episode. So for the last, I think it started in summer. I think that's when we did our first one. We've been interviewing some students from around the United States.
Yeah, talking about both their personal and professional experiences addressing sex and intimacy within the field of OT.
So our first segment here is going to be with Kayla, who was a student when we talked to her. She was on her field work, but it's been so long because she is now officially OTR/L.
Congratulations, Kayla. Woo!
So take a listen to what Kayla had to say about her experiences.
All right, so we are here today with Kayla Concannon, and she is getting her Master's of Occupational Therapy from the University of Scranton. Welcome, Kayla.
Thank you. Good morning.
Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to be our first student guest.
Oh, really? I didn't realize that.
Yes.
I'm excited to be here. So like you said, I went to the University of Scranton. It's a 5-year master's program. And while I was there, I focused on, my OT studies, but I also focused on counseling and human services and American Sign Language. And those two areas, I think, gave me this desire to be an advocate for underserved populations, especially when it comes to mental health and the deaf community, and then, of course, OT areas, like people with varying abilities. Mm-hmm. So I've been listening to your podcast for a while. I think I heard of you through the Sex Intimacy OT, Catherine Ellis. Mm-hmm. And I've also been attending AOTA conferences for the past 3 years. So I've just heard of you, through the sessions I've attended.
Very cool. Can you tell us a little bit about how was sexuality and sex addressed in your program?
So that's an interesting question. So I went to Scranton, which is a Jesuit university. So a lot of times in those sorts of settings, sexuality is kind of taboo to talk about. Mm-hmm. But I had some really sex positive professors through my program, a couple that really stand out in my mind that did give us education on sexuality through the lifespan, but also gave us opportunities for independent study for it, which was really nice that it was like accepted in my program to talk about, because I know that is not the majority of programs.
Right.
So we talked about it, like I've heard from a lot of your other listeners and stuff that a lot of people talk about it in a geriatrics course. So mm-hmm. I had that with Marlene Morgan, who brought it up with the Plicit model, which is kind of the classic gateway into talking about sex and intimacy in OT courses. And Rita Fleming Castaldi talked about it a lot. So that was really awesome to start those conversations and make it okay in the classroom.
Mm-hmm. Do you think, were all your classmates okay with it?
No, I would not say so. I think it's kind of interesting. The people that were more outspoken in my classes, I think, were the ones that were more comfortable with their own sexuality. I think, well, I think it depends on the person. Some people are more comfortable talking about it personally, but not professionally. And some people are the opposite, where they can talk about it like with a client, no problem. But when it comes to their own sexuality and intimacy, it's like, oh, I don't know what to say, or I'm not supposed to be thinking about this.
So as you're on your level two field work now, right?
Mm-hmm.
So all that coursework is still fresh in your mind. Do you have any advice to people teaching in OT and OTA programs on what students need? What would be beneficial?
Sure. that is a tough question. I feel like not only creating the opportunities to talk about it, but almost like forcing us to become more comfortable with it, the same way we're sort of, I don't want to use the word force, but we become more empathetic to other types of scenarios that we would address as OTs. Like we spend a day in a wheelchair, or we go to low vision centers, or we work with deaf people, or we, you know, volunteer with people with intellectual disabilities, different things like that. But we don't talk about sex with any of those kind of populations, and all of those populations need to talk about sex and intimacy too. So I feel like in the same way that we put ourselves out there for that pragmatic experience in other situations, we have to be able to become more comfortable with sex as students, so that when it's time to be practitioners, we're comfortable and ready to lead those conversations.
And sounds like stop compartmentalizing it. We kind of silo it off.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like one place in the curriculum as opposed to.
Yeah.
Integrated throughout.
It's like one lecture.
Yeah.
It'll be like one lecture in a whole semester is like, today's the day we talk about sex, as instead of that we talk about it throughout the semester, throughout the years.
Mm-hmm. Which is interesting because we do talk, there's other things we talk about all the time. ADL, like the other ADLs,
right?
Yes. All the time with all the other populations across the lifespan. We just forget this one. Yep. Okay.
Yeah, we just push that one to the side.
Now, since you're in your field work, you've got this unique perspective. Mm-hmm. Are you seeing sex and intimacy being addressed in your field work placements currently?
Yeah. So actually, to backtrack a little bit, the way I sort of got thrown into these conversations was last summer at my first level two field work. I had just finished undergrad, and we do a field work before our 1 year of grad school, and then we do our second field work after that. Last summer, I was on a crisis intervention psychiatric unit, and it was really interesting because I had many clients coming to me and saying, no, I couldn't take my meds anymore because my partner said if my libido doesn't come back up, they can't stay with me, or the opposite, or my medicine or my mental illness made me hyperactive sexual and I can't, my partner isn't like on the same level as me. So it's made our relationship really strained, really difficult. And it was either focus on my mental health or focus on our relationship. And I couldn't do both. So that's what I had a lot last summer, is these people coming to me in crisis after some kind of a traumatic experience. They ended up in the emergency room and then they came to us on the unit. And it was just like a almost daily conversation about how mental illness affected their sex lives.
Was it being addressed?
And also,
like,
it was. So my My supervisor there was also really sex positive. So it was really helpful because she kind of guided me initially in those conversations. And she was actually a third career OT, which was super interesting. She was also a yoga instructor and a massage therapist. So she was very in touch with the body, the emotions, mindfulness. And that was like the best kind of mentor I could have had for my first experience as a fieldwork student, because she guided me in the way to have those conversations like most comfortably.
Wow, you were lucky. Yes.
Yeah, I was. I know. I was really lucky with all of my fieldwork placements. And then this summer, I'm working at a, it's kind of hard to describe it. It's like a residential brain injury program. It's post-acute. Most people are years away from their injury, but they are different than my last summer, because in addition to the mental health aspect of acquiring a disability, we also have both physical and cognitive impairments that are concerns in just like our daily sessions and groups. So with the physical impairments, we have a lot of people in wheelchairs, a lot of people that use walkers, crutches, all sorts of different mobility aids, and then have different kinds of tone and all those sorts of things that can come with neurological injuries. And then with the cognition, we have a lot of people who have impaired orientation, memory, judgment, and overall just like safety awareness. So since the very beginning of my field work, my supervisor and I have talked about the importance of addressing sexuality with disabilities and also consent with cognitive impairments, which has been like a really interesting dynamic that was my goal to learn about at the ASECT conference.
Well, what a perfect segue.
I know, but wait, I do have one question before we segue. Sure. So who initially brought up the topic of sex and intimacy working with this population? Was it you or your supervisor?
Well, it's kind of, I had a really lucky start time. So when I started my fieldwork, it was, so I'm from near Philadelphia, and that weekend after my first week was Philadelphia Pride. And the next weekend I was going to the ASECT conference. So it was just like back to back, we're talking about our weekends, what's going on. And I can't say who brought it up first. It was just like part of the conversation in our day to day, like, oh, how's your day going? How was your weekend?
Okay, nice.
Yeah.
Cool.
Also, my supervisor this summer went to the University of Scranton. So we kind of have that connection there and had a lot of the same professors and a lot of the same courses. So it's been really, really nice to have that.
So you went to the ASAC conference this mm-hmm. year? 2019
this year.
Remind us, I can never remember what it fully stands for. I know what it is, but I always forget what it all stands for.
So it's the American Association of Sexuality Educators, Counselors, and Therapists.
Okay. So tell us first kind of what it was like being there. I'm guessing not a lot of OT students, probably not a lot of OTs, if any.
Yeah.
What's that like?
So, I guess, well, the main thing that I noticed immediately upon walking in was how different it was than an AOTA conference. Okay. So I love the AOTA conference. I've been to the past three, and I'm like so grateful for the opportunity to network and learn from all these excited practitioners in all their settings. But I think we're all aware that the profession is majority cis white women. Mm-hmm. And walking into the ASECT was totally different. You just right off the bat see people of all genders, sexualities, cultures. Like, it was diverse in the best way, where it wasn't just, you know, like cis white women talking about how to address people of all different backgrounds. It was people of those backgrounds speaking for themselves. Mm-hmm. And it was really, really awesome in that way. And it's kind of funny, at the AOTA conference, at the expo, they hand out all those like pens and goniometers and all those different materials. Like at this conference, they were handing out like lube, and they had like all these different like porn websites that they were promoting. Like it was just totally different what the resources were and the freebies for the professionals.
That sounds fun, right?
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun. I found it kind of on accident. I was trying to research for an assignment for one of my classes, and I was looking up like sexuality resources in the Philadelphia area, and I found this conference or this group called the ASECT, and they had a conference this summer in Philadelphia, and it travels all over the country. So I was like, wait a second, it's in my backyard. And registration opened the next morning. I was like, I think I have to go to this.
And there it was.
Yeah. So I felt like obligated to go. And then, yeah, it was just a really awesome experience, because the people that were there are in all different types of sex therapy counseling. They're teachers, they're sex educators, they're sex workers. Like it was just really, really cool.
So what were some of the big takeaways from that conference, mm-hmm. things that you learned?
Well, I think that's hard to narrow down. I went to a lot of different types of sessions. One thing that stood out to me was that one of my session facilitators said something related to why people come see him in therapy. And he said, you know, I don't take my car to the shop to prove how well it's running. So by definition, people that come seek our services as OT practitioners are because they have some kind of a barrier to the life that they want to live. And so our job is to, I think, address the barriers that they're bringing to us, and also maybe shed light on the barriers that they're not quite seeing. Mm-hmm. And I think, well, the main conversations were about like gender identity and sexual orientation and different things like that, and how those all have different intersections into like the unique people that we all are. And there were just so many parallels to OT about like holistic practice and person-centered. And it was really, really, you know, inspiring to feel those parallels between that profession and ours. And I don't know, I wish more OTs knew about it, which is why I'm happy I'm talking to you.
So I have a question. Do you feel mm-hmm. like your OT program did a good job, or did at all cover gender and gender differences and transgender and sexuality? And I'm guessing by the look on your face.
Yeah, the podcast is just audio, but the look on my face says not really. I don't think my program did the best job at it. As with many programs, and also with my university, just didn't have a huge presence of diversity. But there were offices on my campus that were really good at addressing it, that I sought out, you know, as an RA, as a club leader, that I wanted to learn more about the people that I was serving and that I would come into contact with professionally or just, you know, out in public. Mm-hmm. So we had a women's center and an office of equity and diversity and a cultural center, and all of those offices did a really awesome job at hosting events aimed at like teaching the students about different types of people. So I would say the opportunities were there if you sought them out, or maybe if you identified with a community and you could share with the class about it, but that wasn't always the case.
Oh. You, I would say, JJ, I think you're going to agree with me, have done a lot more than most students.
Agreed. Yes, in terms of becoming more sex literate.
And advancing yourself. Mm-hmm. Do you have advice for current or soon-to-be OT students on how to make the most of that time as a student?
Sure. I think probably the best things that I did were, you know, find those offices that talk about what you want to learn about. Use those databases that you have access to while you have access to them. And you can do continuing education as a student. Like, I've been to the AOTA conferences, I've been to the DEF conferences and ASECT, and continuing ed after you graduate doesn't have to be boring. Like, it's awesome to go to just the traditional ones, but you can go find something that's interesting to you, and it makes you, you know, more of an asset for your future clients, and also teaches you a lot of things about yourself.
I think it's great that you've gone outside of the field of OT to do these continuing education, that your continuing education doesn't have to just be around occupational therapy practice.
Right.
You can use these other disciplines to broaden your mind, and how do I bring these other elements, you know, and be more holistic with my clients.
Right. And I've attended like all the sexuality sessions at the past AOTA conferences, and they're awesome, like, because they do talk about... But they're so great because they're OT practitioners that have our same, you know, domain, and how they address it and how they write notes on it and how they, you know, prove that that's a skilled service that they're addressing, which is so important as, you know, OT practitioners. But it's been really cool to go to a session on trans people by a trans person, or go to a session on, you know, sex workers as allies by sex workers. You know, it's different when it's someone's personal perspective rather than someone who said, you know, I work with these people, this is what they say, but hearing it from the person firsthand is just like a totally different experience.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Kayla, thank you so much for being on OT After Dark. I think this is great.
Thank you.
Perspective on fieldwork, education, and continuing education.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
Next up, we have Emilio and Kristen, who we had the pleasure of meeting face-to-face at the SSO conference this year.
And tell everybody what SSO is, because I bet a lot of listeners don't know what SSO is.
Oh, it's my favorite conference ever. It's the Society for the Study of Occupation. So it's the big occupational science conference that is held every year.
So we got to meet Emilio and Kristen there, and then it took some doing, but a couple months after that, we were able to... actually sit down and talk to them and interview them about the research that they did as part of their occupational therapy program. So take a listen to that.
Hello, and we are here today with Emilio Villavicencio and Kristen Gottheil, and they are both Masters of Science in Occupational Therapy students at Dominican University of California. So welcome, Emilio and Kristen.
Hi, thank you.
So you guys reached out to us happily, and then by total coincidence, we were all at the same conference in beautiful Scottsdale, Arizona. So we got to meet up, but we didn't get to record. We got to record with your instructor, I believe, right? She's but we didn't get to record with you, so we're going to do that now. What I would love to start with is you guys, I mean, when you first reached out, it was about your research, which is related to sexuality. So
yes.
Talk to us about your research.
Yeah, tell us about that.
Yeah. So we've been doing this, so we're 3rd year here at this program, so we're just about wrapping up. But when we first started, we were looking at, you know, different realms of dating and sexuality and stuff like that. And we had gotten into an article our first semester of the first year, and we were doing psychosocial, and there was an article from Lisa Craig and her and some colleagues that were talking about how hearing voices may or may not impact work as an occupation. And so when it got to our turn to do our project, we really got a lot of influence from them. We really loved that article. And so we thought combining the two of, you know, relationships and hearing voices and how that would pan out in their day-to-day experience. Mm-hmm. And so we started talking about that. And then one of our professors actually met you guys at AOTA, and she brought us your card, and she's like, this is so great. You know, they seem like really interested in this. And we at the time didn't have a lot of resources, and we didn't know what we were going to be, you know, finding, you know, gaps in practice and stuff like that. And you know, when we found you guys had a lot of resources and stuff like that. So mm-hmm. that's how we started our research. And then Kristen could kind of talk about how it developed, I think, over time.
Wait, I was like, a professor.
Yeah, and it's actually one of the
Yeah.
I did not know this.
Not the one that you guys met in Arizona.
But yeah, actually that Craig article that Amelia was talking about was the first qualitative study to focus on the specific impact of voice hearing on people's working lives. And so thinking about how, you know, individuals are occupational beings, it's pretty profound that it's the only article within our domain that looks at the relationship of hearing voices and that influence of occupation. And then just combining Karen's wealth of knowledge with her, you know, private practice with dating, we just wanted to dive deep into it. Yeah, we're really excited to be talking about this with you guys today. And so what we did is we actually recruited three participants. We used flyering and convenience sample, and we actually found some participants from the Bay Area in California and actually the Republic of Ireland. And we actually, a lot of our study was framed from that original Craig article. And so what they did is they actually used their data collection method of electronic diary writing. And so actually in their article, they provided an evidence-based justification for using that in phenomenological research. And so they thought that it had advantages over face-to-face interviews by allowing time to reflect on responses and encouraging more open disclosure, and then also enabling participation from people from dispersed geographical areas. And mm-hmm. we thought that was so pertinent to our, you know, the group that we were working with as well. And so we wanted to see what their day-to-day experience of being in a romantic or sexual relationship looked like. And so we used the 6 weeks of diary entries for them. But then we also wanted to understand the context of those entries. And so we used a survey before that just asked what their past and present relationships look like. And then we followed up with a personalized interview that was pretty semi-structured, but it just opened an opportunity to ask clarifying questions. And those interviews really range from 50 minutes to 2 hours. So all in all, we have just a wealth of data mm-hmm. That we've collected over the course of our study. And so we're pretty much at the end of it. And we've compiled a lot of our themes and discussions implications, but there's just a lot of really rich data to go through still.
So what did you guys find? What are the highlights?
And so actually in the original Craig article, one of the themes that we found most interesting was understanding the dynamic relationship between, voices and occupations. And so we actually found the same thing here as well, that occupations can influence voices and voices can influence occupations. And just as a preface, when we're talking about voices, we actually are using the language from the hearing voices community. And so when they refer to hearing voices, their definition is more of an umbrella term. So it's not just including,
auditory,
but it's also including different types of senses, including visual, olfactory, tactile, and gustatory. And so some of our participants actually reported using their experiences, auditory voices, and some other participants using their words described it more as visions, sometimes color, and then altered states. So just moving forward, we're talking about voices, it's more of an umbrella term. But yeah, going back to that interaction between voices and occupations, we found that it has this dynamic and reciprocal relationship. And one of our participants reported that after smoking a couple of cigarettes, later that night she had difficulty sleeping. And so, understand that engagement in that occupation actually influenced her presence of her voices. And then just to kind of counter that voices actually can influence occupations. One of our participants reported that she actually experienced some trauma with her past boyfriend. And when she was engaging in sex with her boyfriend, she wanted to use her for sex while they were in the middle of having sex. And so just kind of understanding that, the performance of an occupation and that engagement can actually influence the activity of hearing for the experience of hearing voices, and that the experience of hearing voices can actually influence the performance of the occupation. Mm-hmm. So, and then just kind of tying that back into occupational therapy, that, using that wealth of knowledge, the participants used it to adapt their occupational engagement. And so one of our participants reported that her voices kind of come more prevalently when she has idle time or free time. And so to counter that, she actually likes to keep busy. And she actually works full, she has a full-time job, a part-time job. She has her husband that she spends a lot of time with, and family and friends, and she exercises all the time. And so that kind of just ties back into the whole meaning of occupational therapy, and that engagement in occupation can elicit flow, and it's actually good for your overall health and well-being. And so that was actually a pretty cool finding that we found.
Yeah.
That's great. Can you talk a little bit about the experience being student researchers and addressing sex and how your program approached it, and you know, what kind of your professors thought of it when you proposed this topic?
Yeah. So we kind of talked about that a little bit, kind of going into this, just thinking about it. And we didn't have, I feel like our capstone, our research is always the taboo one, right? Always people looking at it and like questioning it, like, whoa, what are they doing? They see sexual relationships on our poster and they're always very curious about it. But you know, our school is pretty good about, our program is very good about addressing it actually, which is really nice. I don't know if that has anything to do with our location being in the Bay Area or whatnot, and just our professors' knowledge on what they have taught in the past or what they have been taught. I think the biggest course that we got a lot of this exposure to was with Karen, our psychosocial professor, who you've met. She really kind of opens that door. I think one of her lectures was, you know, Jesus, religion, and the elephant in the room, which is sex or something like that. So she uses a lot of humor. And yeah, she's really funny. She likes to bring an elephant too, like a little toy elephant. And she's like, let's talk about that elephant in the room. And then everybody's like, what is she talking about? And so she really addresses it, and she kind of goes head on, and she uses a lot of humor, which is really nice, because it starts to lighten up the conversation about sex, gender, sexuality, all these different topics that she, you know, that are going to be important in our practice. Mm-hmm. And so she is really good about talking about that stuff. We get it very lightly in our other classes, like adults and seniors, when we're talking about spinal cord injury and hip precautions and things like that. And actually, I had the opportunity in assistive technology class to talk about this as well. We used assistive technology to help an individual who had experienced a spinal cord injury engage in sexual activity. And so in class, it was really funny. We tried to use a little bit of humor too, but keep it professional as well. But our professor, she loved it. She thought it was great. I remember her emailing me at the end and saying, like, this is such an important topic, and you know, kudos to you for like talking about it, because I don't know if anybody else has done that. But you know, there was some laughs and things like that in the class when we were talking about it. But it's just important, you know. You know, I was talking to Kristen about this earlier too, and after class, you know, we used assistive technology, and I haven't seen everything, right? We had to look at all these things that are out there, and there's this thing called the magic wand. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys have ever seen this, but apparently, so it's where we're thinking.
Classic. Come on, Emilio.
Exactly. Okay, so this is my fault, because I had no idea. And after class, I was still like super excited about this topic. I thought it was so fun to get this opportunity to talk about it. And I was talking to a friend outside of school, and I was telling him what we did. And he's like, dude, I don't know if you've ever seen this thing, but it's like the size of your arm. You can't do that. Like, you can't adapt that to be that easy, kind of thing. And so I thought it was really funny. But yeah, the class really loved it, and it was a really good way to kind of get that conversation started.
Do you have advice to any educators that might be listening on the kind of the best approach to addressing sexuality with OT and OTA students? And should it be an all? It's interesting that it seems like it's not a lot of your physical dysfunction class. Do you think it should be in more classes, more talk?
Yeah, definitely. I wish it was kind of brought up just because, you know, even going back to that story, like I had no clue. Like these are the things that, you know, when it's talked about a little bit more, we become more comfortable with it. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And even over the course of these 3 years, you know, Kristen and I and our other partner, we being able to say sexual relationships or tell somebody about our, you know, capstone and feel comfortable saying like, when this individual was having sex with, you know, so-and-so, this is what's happening in front of our professors. You know, at first we were like really kind of shy about it. And now we just talk about it all the time. So it's ADL, nice.
Right?
Yeah.
What was that?
It's like any other ADL. You just, you know, it should be. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And it's great. Cause I think, you know, Kristen said it, you know, in front of our professor the other day, and she was walked out there. She's like, I didn't even think about it. I just, you know, went off and said sex, sex, sex. And it just was so much easier.
I know. So, what a journey to think about where I started and where I ended and not, you know, talking and then being all quiet and be like, sex. we're not giggling or anything. And it's just really being a lot more comfortable talking. Yeah. Just being a lot more comfortable talking about it. And, you know, just if it's brought up with the student or professor, just knowing, you know, if that topic is brought up, just be kind and open and non-judgmental and don't brush it off. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't, if you do brush it off or you don't bring it up, you'll teach them not to talk about it again.
Yeah. Okay. And you reinforce all the stigma that is already surrounding sex right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any other, what else do you want to tell us?
I mean, I think I talked about it earlier. I personally like the humor in it. You know, maybe just lightening up the classroom and really going from there. I think one of our professors, you know, Karen, I'll go back to Karen because she's hilarious amongst other things. But yeah, she said, I think she started off with saying, talked about masturbation and she, or, you know, like kind of just bringing that up and because that as part of it. And she's like, yeah, I think OTs have a role in that. She's like, I think it's called hand therapy. So, you know, using humor, like Kristen said, being kind and just understanding and all that is just, you know, there are chapters in Pedretti and things like that, these books that we have, but, you know, how do we address it? And just being comfortable with it is the hardest part because we could read it all day and understand it. Mm-hmm. But having that conversation and letting people know it's okay would be really nice.
Yeah. And the more you talk about it, the more comfortable you get talking about it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's been a wonderful opportunity to bridge this connection between, you know, relationships that may involve sexual occupations with this community of individuals that hear voices. And when we went to talk with them at their meetings and over emails and things like that, they really commended us, which sounds really silly, but they commended us for bringing up this topic.
No doubt.
Which may sound very silly, sex is an ADL, it's something that should be brought up.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes it can, you know, you think of certain populations or that you're working with, you don't see them as sexual beings. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, for Amila and I and our whole team, we thought, of course, we're going to be talking about this. And so that kind of shed some light on it as well and just reinforced the importance of what we were doing.
Yeah. Well, I just want to say, like, thank you guys so much for bringing more to the wealth of knowledge in the field of OT regarding sex and sexual activity, especially in these different populations. I think, you know, it's obviously a much needed research topic. So thank you guys so much for jumping in and doing it with us.
Yeah. Of course. That's awesome.
So finally, our final segment, we want to start by just letting you know a content warning, a trigger warning on this segment. There is talk of sexual abuse, sexual assault in this segment. We met a student out and about in our travels.
And we had the chance, and Catherine so graciously gave us her story and her experience on sex and intimacy, and not only from her personal experience, but then also how that has shaped her education and how she views it as a future occupational therapist.
So sit back and take a listen to what Catherine has to say.
So we are here with Catherine, who is an occupational therapy doctoral student. Welcome, Catherine. We are very excited for you to be here on OT After Dark.
You just stumbled so into us.
She didn't know
the best stumble of the day.
Didn't know what she was getting into when we walked over. So we'd love for you to tell us about your experience about sex and education in your OT program.
Sex and education in my OT program, or sex, education, and my OT program.
Wherever you want to take it.
Let it flow.
Sex is a very important subject, topic, occupation for myself, for reasons going back as long as I can remember. I am a survivor of early childhood sexual abuse. I lost one of my brothers to complications from AIDS when I was coming of age myself in the 90s. So that is very informative for the rest of my life. What sex is, sex was not fun. Mm-hmm. It was an achievement. Pleasure was always something out there.
It was like a secondary.
It was out there. So I developed sexual attractions for women when I was married to a man, which was also interesting. I was a very young bride. I got out of my hometown as fast as I could. Did that good old way of
marriage,
sex and marriage. Yep. The wiles of a woman. I am a survivor of spousal rape. He was very violent and he left me to die. I spent a week in the hospital. And I spent the next 10 years figuring that out.
Figuring that out.
Lots of sex. Lots of anonymous sex. Lots of trying to figure out relationship sex. Trying to figure out pleasure. Intimacy was, that was advanced. That was way advanced. So the building blocks for me didn't start until much later in life, and self-education, self-taught. Married again to a very safe person who ended up being on the spectrum that I wasn't aware of. I am very new to healthcare. I'm a middle-aged person, and I know we've already talked about why I keep bringing that up, because one, it's hard for me to imagine myself at this age. I didn't think I would make it this far. And now that I'm here, sex is just starting to get good. And menopause is right in front of me.
Yeah, I know.
So there's like, well, fuck. I guess better late than never, but bring on the hormone pills. So I found occupational therapy. I was teaching abroad. I was teaching English as a second language in Colombia. I was deeply moved by the social impact of narco violence. I was teaching in Medellin, Colombia, and I would take the train every day to work as part of my commute. And everyone takes the train in Medellin. It is just this jewel of the country. It's everyone takes the train, and everyone on the train past a certain age has some kind of physical marks of violence on their body. We talk about hidden disabilities. We talk about, you know, struggling with mental health issues my whole life, challenges my whole life. Here I was coming face to face with markers of the body that you couldn't escape. And when I say everyone rides the train, everyone rides the train. And there's no, Colombia is a communal society. There's very little personal space understanding to begin with, and then everyone's on the train. So you're pressed up against bodies that put you in confrontation with a history that you can't even imagine. So it brought me very face to face with my brother's illness. He had Kaposi's sarcoma. You could not touch him at the end stages of his life because of the pain and the deformity it caused, the rapid weight loss. He looked skeletal. He was 28 when he died, and he died looking like someone in his late 60s, 70s. Mm-hmm. So it was a very triggering experience for me, one that caused me to ultimately have to leave my post. Mm-hmm. Unprocessed trauma is a bitch. It comes up in the most surprising of places. And I came back to the States, and I was working at a yoga studio, and I was trying to figure it out, and namaste, and okay, like maybe I can just meditate my way out of this one. And a colleague at the studio said, well, have you thought about occupational therapy? I didn't want to do psychotherapy. I didn't want to do social work. I didn't want to, and this is my, I think those, I've used those professions, professionals, they have, in many ways saved my life. This is not a disrespect to them, but for me, I could not wallow in that as a profession. I could not just keep talking about things that were, what can we do? What can I do? And a colleague mentioned occupational therapy. I'm like, what? What's that?
Never heard of that.
Well, Google, okay. I'm making $8 an hour. Let me just Google that while I'm on shift. So I did, and my undergrad, it took for a whole slew of reasons about 20 years, actually exactly 20 years. August 23rd, 1994 is when I started my first college class, and I graduated August 22nd, 2014. That final year, I had the extreme privilege, I still don't even know how it happened, to be educated by some of the finest minds I've ever encountered at the University of Washington, Seattle. Foucault enters my world. International perspectives, what we will call occupational justice. I did my capstone. We talked earlier today about the wall, nonviolent oppression, and the Palestinian West Bank wall. All of these things brought me to this experience of how we live our everyday. How do we, for me, how do I survive in everyday? Mm-hmm. And then it moves from survival to poking your toes in waters of potential, and leveraging whatever you have, that resiliency, those survival skills, and how you leverage those to do an everyday. And so I'm Googling occupational therapy. I never thought of myself as a therapist. I've always been an intellectual, but a PhD seemed like whoa, way out there. So I was like, well, what is this? It's doing your everyday. How do you do an everyday? Affect theory was something that I was introduced to at the University of Washington, and it was very profound to me. How we experience emotions and how those emotions can make or break our daily experiences. So there was something, and I'm still figuring it out. I'm in year two of my program, and I'm still figuring out what this thing called occupation is to me, what occupational therapy is to me. Sex has been, it started off as something horrible, something dark, if we're going to go there. And it has become the greatest tool to my own self-liberation, that no therapy, no self-reflection has ever been able to offer, because when you're alone with another person and you are making yourself vulnerable, naked, opening, literally, for a woman at least, opening yourself, I can't speak to the male experience, but opening yourself up literally to let another person into your body through penetrative sex, the risk, the trust, the vulnerability. Each encounter was a chance for me to reclaim myself. So I'm 43. I'm in a program that is very, I would say, on the conservative side. I am in a smaller city, even if you could call it a city, and the historical remnants of just time and space and location influence the program based on who the faculty members are, what is taught, approved curriculum. So I feel myself being silenced quite mm-hmm. a bit. With deep respect to my classmates, because we all got into the same program. Mm-hmm. And I think they will all make fine clinicians. Mm-hmm. But there is an absenteeism of experience that I'm having a hard time finding my place, finding mm-hmm. yes. my voice. Yeah. I'm waking up and going to classes every day like... Mm-hmm. It's so surreal.
So right. I have a question. What do you think the program could do differently to give you your voice?
Great question. Ask. Mm-hmm. No one's asked me.
What's your story?
What's your story? What does occupation mean to you?
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah, right.
What is occupation mm-hmm. to you? I'm being...
Which is interesting that it doesn't even... I mean, the program I teach in, I feel like that's where we start, is what's your story and what is your occupation. So that's interesting to hear that that's not the case.
We are
across
fed
the, okay.
immediately. We are fed information. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Not and, a lot of discussion.
And no. What are you doing with occupation for other individuals, but not self-reflecting on what is occupation
for you?
For you,
and certainly not sex as an occupation.
Has it been mentioned as an occupation?
It has, but very quickly. Because I feel like, you know, that's the box that. On, okay, yeah. we met that.
We mentioned
okay.
it.
Yeah, we mentioned it. And next, let's talk about, you know, children you think that's a, you and peace. Yay!
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think that's a,
yay! Sensory integration!
And do you think that's a discomfort on the part of the instructors?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Personal or professionally, I can't speak to that. Mm-hmm. I think there might be a couple of faculty members at least who would like to, or at least be open to that mm-hmm. discussion, but mm-hmm. I think the way that we just transition into a doctoral program, we're having a lot of changeover with faculty, new deans, like mm-hmm. a lot of newness, and I appreciate that that creates a little foundational instability, and you kind of have to go back to bare bones when you're not postulally secure.
Yeah.
We're going to use occupational language. But at the same time, I feel like I am missing something that mm-hmm. I need in my education.
Right.
I would like to pursue, I'm so thrilled about hearing entrepreneurship in OT and taking what we learn and helping people outside of the mm-hmm. clinic. And even just outside of, you know, community-based settings, but how can we work truly one-on-one with clients with a passion, that mm-hmm. something that we have passion about. Mm-hmm. Because sex has been such a victory for me, I want to keep that going, and mm-hmm. I want to, it's so important. First of all, we're all here I read in a paper once, we're all here because of 3 billion years of fucking.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
True story.
Right, right.
Exactly.
So let's just be honest. Like, it's part of who we are,
yeah.
whether we are asexual or not, or participate in sexual activities or not.
Somebody fucked to
somebody
get you
fucked
here.
Somebody fucked and we're here.
And we're, exactly.
How that played out,
yeah.
who knows, but that's the brass tacks of it. Something so... chromosomal, something so embedded in our DNA, something so mm-hmm. part of the boundaries of our skin, mm-hmm. and that we're not talking about it all the time, and not just in fun ways, and not just in like private ways, mm-hmm. but as common discourse.
Mm-hmm.
What did you have to eat? What position did you try last night?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why
right.
can't we have those?
Why can't we have those yeah. conversations?
Yeah.
I have a question for you. So, thinking about your lived experience, how do you see that either helping or enhancing or limiting your practice as a future occupational therapist?
Thank you for asking that, because it's something I dwell on daily. I firmly believe that I have gone through and made the choices that I've made, and I'm here mm-hmm. for a reason, to help other people. I have deep empathy skills, and I can feel things that many people miss, I've noticed throughout my life. And that's both a burden and a privilege. I struggle with where I will be as an OT. Like, part of my brain just wants to go into hand therapy because it's so clinical and, like, biomechanical.
No,
and I
you're
don't
not meant to be.
I know, I know. But God, how lucky those people are from my perspective, because when you dive into the... I feel like sex is a coin, and one side of it is wonderful, and mm-hmm. the other side of it is... horrible. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we get really good on how we can manipulate the coin flip, and other times the coin is flipped for us. When I work with friends mostly, or companions, or acquaintances in my personal field, when I encounter people who have gone through sexual trauma, experienced it, I do really well. But in a clinical setting where I don't get to make my own schedule, when I have a billable hour of 15 minutes and I have to go through this ridiculous, what I think is the PLIS model is very, have you heard of the PLIS model? And it's, I shouldn't say it's ridiculous. It does serve a person, but it's so clinical.
Limited.
And it's just, once again, checking a box, and sexuality unleashes the box mm-hmm. of the body and takes you and can defy temporality, those orgasms that we have mm-hmm. that leave us in that state of bliss and take us to magical places, and then we're brought back. Mm-hmm. What happens between the time of orgasm and coming back from that bliss state? Mm-hmm. And that's the beautiful part of it. But when you're working with forced sex, rape, sexual trauma, incest, I don't know if I'm getting the skills. I think that's what it, thank you for this, because I think what I'm discovering just now is that what my beef is with my program is that I'm not getting the skills that I need to do the work that needs to be done.
So leads me to my maybe final question, I don't know. Any OT educators that are listening right now, what do you want occupational therapy educators to know about teaching future practitioners about addressing sexuality, sex, intimacy, relationships, all of those things? I know, easy question.
I know. Yeah. Well, I have an answer for that. No, I'm going to not answer that directly because I don't know how to answer that directly, but what I can say is advocacy for higher ups. I am a student. I have no power. Mm-hmm. I have zero power. I show
you have
up.
More power than you probably think.
You, yeah. I am learning that because I did have a very hard first year. I had some PTSD issues that had to be addressed, and I learned some very serious self-advocacy skills very quickly. But at the end of the day, it's not going to influence what happens at the program level. I feel educators are in a very hard, I don't think it's easy, but a potential space for leveraging on behalf of students, on behalf of these needs, on behalf of needs that they see. I can go to my dean and I can say, this is what I need. But at the end of the day, I'm going to be gone in 3 years. Tenure has the protection for leverage that I don't. First, ask what occupation is, and all occupations, not just play, and not just work, and not just leisure. Sex is an ADL, and once again, we're all here because someone fucked someone. It's that important. It's the bare bones of why we're here, if not who we are. So with that weight and that gravity, understand that it's that important to address. It's not something to put under the rug. It's not taboo. It's who we are. It's why we're here.
I'm so happy you stumbled into us.
I know.
Thank you so much
for sharing your story and your experience with
thank
with
you for
everything.
This opportunity. Yeah. This is wild and wonderful.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Jesus, I've been so
silent. I have like tears in my...
Well, we hope you enjoyed our student-centered episode.
We enjoyed talking to all those students, getting those different perspectives. That was fun.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a great episode, not only for other students to hear, but other educators and practitioners as well.
Definitely. Definitely educators listen. Listen closely to what students are having to say about how we're doing our job.
Yep.
For better or for worse, how we're doing our job. On that note, sex is an ADL.
Cheers!